welcome to the podcast. You're listening to the Pre-Dead Boys. It is a podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposure. Max, I don't think decomposure is actually a word, but I kind of committed to that already.
I saw that, and I also noticed that it does keep underlining it with a red squiggle
Yes.
in my browser's spell check.
Yeah, because I'm an idiot, and that's not a real word. But the English language is malleable, and I do plan on shoving that word down everyone's throat.
Oh, it's descriptivism, not prescriptivism. I took one linguistics course in college, and I learned a dictionary will describe the language instead of prescribing how it should be spoken.
Oh, okay. It's descriptive, not prescriptive.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Welcome to Pre-Dead Boys, where we're describing, not prescribing, and always fantasizing about death. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. How you doing, Max?
Not too bad, Dorian. How about yourself?
Pretty good. I don't know if you followed the Olympics at all, the Winter Olympics.
I have been.
Oh, yeah. Are you watching the Winter Games then?
Uh-huh.
Well, I found an interesting piece of information that you probably already know.
Okay.
And that's going to bum me out. So just, I'm going to tell you this.
Should I pretend like I don't know it?
Just
if
pretend to be really interested and fascinated at this thing that you don't know about. Have you been watching figure skating?
No, not really, no. More of a fan of the downhill events and skiing.
Yeah. Hey, how about Shaun White doing those nasty...
That was sick. McTwists?
Yeah, it was bonkers. Anyway, apparently there are other countries in the games too, and other events other than snowboarding, which was news to me this year. But there's figure skating.
Uh-huh.
And in particular, there's a Russian figure skater. Have you heard about this 18-year-old girl named Evgenia Medvedeva? And I probably butchered that.
No, unless she did doubles. I watched doubles once. But
no, just indie. Indie figure skater.
She's uncuffed.
She made her program around, quote, the flight of the soul as it leaves someone's body at the point of clinical death.
What?
Yeah.
I like that she specified clinical death.
That's... Yeah, very, very articulate. And it was set to Chopin's Nocturne in C sharp minor.
Okay. You think we could get her on here?
Yeah. Almost certainly, you know. Once that LaCroix sponsorship and MeUndies and all those guys start calling in and Radiotopia and Gimlet Media come knocking on our doors begging for our attention, we can get guests in. Genia, if you're listening to this, I apologize for totally butchering your name, but drop us a line and we'll edit that out.
Yeah, we'll get a pronunciation guide thing. I found her Twitter, so I'm going to take a pass at it. Here's a tweet that she sent on the 5th of June, 2017, all caps, explain to me where is Lay.
Where is Lay?
Where is Lay?
Like L-A-Y?
Yeah.
What? There's something lost in translation there.
No. She seems to be pretty capable of English, so I don't know if that's a joke or what, but...
Something.
Also super into anime.
Yeah.
There's a lot of anime on this account.
She did a routine in a Sailor Moon outfit, and she really loves... either K-pop or J-pop or both, which I guess you can be a fan of both.
You can do something with Yuri on Ice or that figure skating anime.
Man, they got an anime for everything now, don't they?
They got a baseball one.
They do. Stay tuned for the podcast anime that Max and I will be featured in.
If you've listened to this already, thank you. And you've already downloaded it, thank you. We genuinely really appreciate it, even though we just spent like 3 minutes talking about figure skating and anime, which is not the content you probably came here for.
Yeah, I totally second that. It's been mind-blowing to see people actually like this thing and want more of it, so we'll make more, and I'll try to talk about figure skating and dumb shit a lot less. You want to get into this, Max?
Yeah, let's crack into this topic for today, sponsored by LaCroix.
We perfectly synchronized that, too.
That was sick. That's not even editing. If you hear that and you're like, oh, they must have edited that, that's a lie.
It's just the power of podcasting, baby.
Power of podcast.
So, as always, Max has researched a topic that he's going to educate me on, teach me a little bit about some morbid stuff. What do you got for us today?
Well, it's morbid and it's very cool. By way of introduction, I just want to kind of bring it in like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sure that since we've launched this, parents... friends, people have come up to you and said, wow, doing a podcast on death sounds like a real downer.
Yeah.
Now I'm someone who's habitually a downer, and I know that the best way to demonstrate to someone that something is not a downer is to bring them scientific proof that the thing that they're calling a downer is in fact not a downer.
this can be proven with science.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, like, people go like, oh, it's just a real bummer. And the best way to refute that is to say, well, actually, no, it's not a bummer. And here's why science says that I'm right. I think when if you read, like, How to Win Friends and Influence People, that's, like, the fifth rule.
Bludgeon them with science is yeah. the... Yeah.
Use their name a lot. Shake their hand is probably in there. Bludgeon them with science.
Shake them a lot.
Shake them.
And then bludgeon them with science.
I mean, you know, if there's one thing more obnoxious than mansplaining things, it's science-splaining. Ooh. And we're about to do a lot of science-splaining in this episode.
Okay.
Which I'm really excited about. I don't know what your background in science is.
Well, but... I want to make friends and influence people, so I'm all ears. as far as my science background goes... my professional accolades basically consist of I went to art school and was in a couple bad bands and just screwed around a lot, which you could call it kind of science. I'd like to think that the scientific method is the philosophy by which I live my life.
Can you explain what the scientific method is?
No.
Or you just kind of live it and feel it?
Nope.
Cool.
It's just science. No one can understand it.
No one knows what the scientific method is. I guarantee that. It's got a hypothesis in there somewhere. So our topic for this kind of fortnightly period is something called terror management theory. Have you ever heard of this?
No. It sounds like the name of my next terrible band.
TMT is a very good abbreviation.
Oh, you can't do that because that's already the money team. For Floyd Mayweather's brand. He's got a trademark on that already. Maybe we can... Hey, Floyd, if you're listening, let's talk. Let's negotiate. We have so much capital to work with here. We are willing to negotiate.
I had never heard of Floyd Mayweather's brand because I don't really care about him as a human.
That's the appropriate response.
Uh-huh. And I hadn't really heard about this before either. I felt like I had, but I also was like, well, that probably has something to do with actual terrorism or something like that.
Sure.
It doesn't.
Okay.
It's actually more rooted in the idea of memento mori, if you're familiar with that.
Ooh, explain what memento mori means.
So if you just reach under your seat.
Jesus. It really creeps me out that you do this. Under the cushion?
Yeah. There's actually nothing under there. I was gonna put it under there, and then I couldn't find it. So if you would just open the Google Doc I sent you instead.
Okay. You really did a good job pranking me there.
Ooh. So can you describe what you're looking at?
I'm looking at a real cool painting, and I've seen this before, but it's of a skeleton with a cigarette in its mouth.
So you may know that from the cover of a David Sedaris book.
Yes. I worked in a bookstore and saw the book, but I never looked inside. But it was a cool-looking book.
It's a cool-looking book. Do you know who painted this?
I remember finding that out at some point. Don't remember.
So it is Van Gogh.
Oh.
Vincent Van Gogh of Mona Lisa fame.
Yes. Didn't he also direct Titanic?
He also directed Titanic and Mona Lisa Smile, actually. So this is a painting titled Skull of a Skeleton with Burning Cigarette. And Van Gogh painted this as kind of a way to show that the art schooling he was going through was really stupid, and it was kind of a big middle finger to his professors.
Okay.
Which is kind of funny. I like when you see the personality of artists like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But a lot of people have looked at this throughout the years and been like, oh, this is Van Gogh, who struggled a lot with clinical depression and mental illness, painting his first memento mori, which is a Latin phrase that translates to roughly remember that you're going to die.
Okay.
So when you look at the history of art, you can look for, I don't know, the hundreds of years that art has been around and see all kinds of paintings that are, you know, stylized skeletons and skeletons dancing with women and things like that.
Right.
And those are ways that people were kind of trying to grapple with what death was like and how we engaged with death. Like, if you've ever seen the movie Seventh Seal?
No.
It's black and white.
Is that Ingmar Bergman?
It is.
I've seen clips of it, but never watched the whole thing.
It's got death in it, and he wears this big robe and plays chess a lot.
Okay.
You know.
Like death do.
It's a meditation on how we kind of engage and grapple with the fact that we're going to die.
Okay.
Graveyards used to serve this purpose. You grew up in the town in Ohio, Westerville.
Yes.
Where Otterbein University is located.
Yeah.
And if you go to the dorms in Otterbein University, there's a graveyard that's right outside one of the doors of a dorm.
Is that off of Main Street?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just Main Street in downtown Westerville.
Yeah, I've seen it a few times.
And it's kind of shocking, and it would be strange to be leaving your dorm every day and on your way to Bio 101 and see just graveyards.
Just remember, AP Chem doesn't matter in the long run. We're all going to the same place.
Well, now you sound like those phone apps that pop up and send you little death reminders, which are delightful.
You have that, right?
I had that. They don't have an Android version of it yet. So I switched from iPhone to Android, and it's pretty nice.
Do you want me to just kind of set a timer and call you every day?
Yeah.
And, hey, Max, how you doing? You're going to die. You know that, right?
Like, don't listen to anything I tell you or engage with me in any other way.
Yeah, but I might have, like, one bad day at work, and then I'll call you and be like, I'm going to kill you! It won't be good, so.
The podcast will end. So, at this point, we've roughly explained what a memento mori is. It's just a reminder that one day you're going to die. And for a long time, it was just how we got that emotional bit of ourselves out and released.
Sure.
But if you're ready, let's start science-splaining, which I'm really going to try and really lean into this at this point.
I've got a fedora in my bag over here. If you want. Actually, m'lady.
Actually. Actually, we're going to talk about what terrage management theory really is. So just a quick little overview. There was a book written in 1973 by an anthropologist named Ernest Becker. And that book was titled The Denial of Death, which I think that is where they got the name of the title character of the TV show Becker.
Oh, okay. That's where it came from.
Yeah.
So is Ted Danson death?
Is Ted Danson in the good place?
He's in Becker.
Is he in the good... He's in the good place, right?
Yeah, he's in the good place.
I think he's death in that.
Is he really?
Yeah.
No shit.
Spoiler alert, I guess. I don't know. It's pretty obvious, I think. I don't know.
Warning. This podcast contains spoilers for The Good Place.
This TV show that's been on for a few years, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
So Ted Danson has this theory.
Yes.
That all of human society is created basically as a defense against our own awareness of mortality. So since we as individuals know that we're going to die, we come together to form a larger society that allows us to symbolically live forever. Or I guess until like the heat death of the universe, or 50 years from now when the oceans rise and we all are underwater and old people tried real hard, but we've really goofed this planet up.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. So terror management kind of springs from these ideas. It says that our society is an imperfect shield for our awareness of mortality, which seems remarkable because I feel like constantly there's things that tell me that I'm going to die.
Sure. Life is distracting us from death?
Yeah.
Is that what it essentially boils down to?
Basically, it says if you were to sit by yourself in a room alone with no stimulus for long enough, you would eventually just focus on death, and you would be like, well, I'm gonna die, I guess.
Okay.
So yeah. What we do when we come together is create society, so we have things to do and roles to fill to distract us from death.
Okay. So far, I don't think we're addressing the criticism that this podcast is super bleak, but I'm interested to see where this goes.
Yeah. So in terror management, they're saying that we constantly deal with this tug of war from remembering that we're about to die and then having to like go play video games or go hang out with your friends to stave it off.
Yeah.
So you're basically trying to contribute some good to the world before you die. It's almost like donating a bunch of money to get your name on a building or something like that. In short, terror management asserts that when people think about death or consider their own mortality, they contribute good things to society.
Okay.
But, in 2016, there was a study released in the Journal of Sport and Exercise Psychology that made the assertion that maybe by thinking about your own death a lot, maybe like you're looking at a lot of paintings of skulls, or you're just listening to this podcast a bunch.
Yes.
It might make you pretty good at basketball.
I feel like
you seem stunned.
My personal experience is that that's not true, but I want to hear this out.
Yeah, so I'm in sports heaven right now. Like, sports rule right now. Like, basketball is great. baseball's starting up, and the Olympics are pretty rad.
Yeah.
What sports are you a fan of?
The fighting ones.
The Olympics.
Oh,
I care about what you're interested in outside of the Olympics, but specifically in the Olympics.
The Winter Games specifically?
Yeah.
Snowboarding is cool. Just anything going downhill. I saw one that was real crazy where it looks like they're on skates in a weird little closed track and they're...
Oh, that's luge.
Not luge, because they're individual, you know.
That's bobsled. Bobsled is a team.
No. Not no. Sitting on a thing. Like, they're on skates and they're like... Oh, no, that was the X Games.
Oh, no. Like roller skates.
No, it was ice skates, but I'm just an idiot. We should move on.
Well, I was worried you were going to say the punchline to this very good joke I thought of and then wrote in my notes so I wouldn't forget. Hey, what's the host of a pre-Dead Boys favorite Winter Olympics sport?
I don't know. What is it?
Skeleton.
Is that...
Do you know what that is?
No, I don't know what that is.
That's the one where they have the big ice course. So there's bobsled, which is the team of four or whatever.
Yes.
And then there's luge, where they lay on basically a sled and go down the thing feet first, but they're going like 70 miles an hour down this big ice course.
Rocketing down it, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
And then skeleton is the same thing as luge, but they go head first.
Yeah, I mean, actually, that probably is a pre-Dead Boys host favorite. It's sounding like my favorite. It sounded like I need to watch the Winter Olympics so that I know any of what you're talking about.
Well, we're going to talk about basketball in a second.
Ugh, sports heaven.
But this study that I mentioned earlier is titled, He Dies, He Scores. Evidence that reminders of death motivate improved performance in basketball.
Why didn't we call our podcast He Dies, He Scores?
We could have done like a combined death basketball podcast.
If we spin this off, that'll be it. So what's the connection? Why does that happen? Did they get into that at all? Or
I don't know how they thought of the idea to do this. Like, I don't know if they were just sitting around in the psychology research lounge and were like, I wonder if we can make people dunk better if we told them they were going to die.
Yeah. Like, hey, watch this Tibetan sky burial video and we're going to measure your vertical.
Go shoot some hoops. So, I pulled the abstract of this study up. It's a pretty quick study, and I can post it in the Facebook group, which you can join,
Yes. And
hopefully in the show notes of this episode as well. I have the abstract pulled up on the next page of this Google Doc, and if you could read that real quick, I would much appreciate it.
Gotta
wet the old whistle. See, if you did that silently, you could have edited it out.
I'm not editing that out. That's staying in. Okay, here we go. This research applied insights from terror management theory to the world of sport. According to TMT, self-esteem buffers against the potential for death anxiety. Because sport allows people to attain self-esteem, reminders of death may improve performance in sport. In study 1, a mortality salience induction led to improved performance in a one-on-one basketball game.
In quotes.
Love how they have that in quotes. In study 2, a subtle death prime led to higher scores on a basketball shooting task, which was associated with increased task-related self-esteem. These results may promote our understanding of sport and provide a novel potential way to improve athletic performance.
You know that, a study was written by a bunch of nerds when they exclusively refer to it as sport.
Understanding of sport. I love to the degrees that they had. A mortality salience induction.
Yeah.
They can connect that to improve one-on-one. But a subtle death prime led to higher scores. So what do you prefer when, you know, you lace up your Jordans and you're ready to play with some friends? Are you more of a subtle death prime before you hit the court kind of guy? Or do you just start off with a little mortality salience?
I'm a subtle death prime fan. I think I just like the idea of having a low-grade awareness of death.
Yes, sure.
Floating around constantly. And I think some of that would knock off some just low-grade anxiety I feel a lot of the time.
Sure.
So that would be nice.
I just want it all up front. Give me that mortality salience induction, please. Don't beat around the bush. Just shoot me straight.
Just let me go.
And then I'll shoot those three straight. You know what I'm talking about.
You gotta rock up.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of them just going to, like, a Cavs game or something and yelling at the players. Like, LeBron James walks out of the tunnel and you're just like, hey, Bron, you're gonna die! And then he just has, like, a quadruple double.
Hey, Bron, block that shot like your life depends on it. Because it does.
As nerdy and just objectively dorky as the abstract is, there's some just grade A quotes in here. The article intros with the sentence, motivation to excel in sport may stem from a variety of sources, such as love of the game or monetary benefits. The present research assessed whether it may also arise from existential concerns. Which is just like, it feels like an alien is observing human culture. It's like, yeah. It seems like they derive monetary benefits from the game.
Love of the game.
Something humans describe as love. It's very good, and I really like that they're trying to be as scientifically objective as possible. Because later on, as we get into the study, they did some pretty outrageous stuff, and it makes me extremely happy. So, they did two studies. And in study one, which is the very overt death prime...
I'm sorry, can you clarify, is that the subtle death prime or is that the mortality salience induction that you're referring to?
I'm sorry, that is the mortality salience induction.
Okay, thank you.
Which, I think I'm a pretty smart person and I know what one of those words means in the context of death. And I know that induction is a pregnancy thing, so...
Ooh.
I know, I've got like a grasp on like one third of the words they're using in that phrase.
Are you saying they impregnate? Let's move on.
Let's just... So in study one, they got a bunch of people from the University of Arizona, and they made them play one-on-one with a researcher. Now, the researcher played with every single participant in this study, so he must have been, like, super good at basketball by the end of this. And they also told him to play as good as he could. So, you know, they would just bring people in and they would be like, all right, you're going to play one-on-one against Jeff over here. We're going to do two halves and we're going to take a little break in the middle. And in the middle, you're going to do a survey. You know, it's pretty standard basketball.
Do you think that they asked him, hey, did you also write down the scores from the games? And he's like, that data was not conclusive and I didn't think it was pertinent to the study when he just got dunked on 17 times in a row.
I also like picturing this as taking place just in a psychology lab, not in a gym. They're just in, like, a white room where someone has, like, put one of the toy basketball hoops on the wall.
Yeah, the one they put above a trash can.
Yeah. So, they hooped for a half, and then they gave them some questions to trigger mortality salience, which is basically just an awareness of your own death.
Okay.
So, what I'm going to have you read now is the researchers talking about what that survey kind of dealt with and how that survey induced a fear of death in participants.
Okay, here we go. Participants were randomly assigned to the MS, death, or control condition. Participants in the MS, death, condition were asked the prototypical open-ended questions regarding their mortality. Quote, please briefly describe the thoughts and emotions that the thought of your own death arouses in you. You know, typical kind of...
The prototypical stuff.
Water cooler stuff. And, quote, jot down as specifically as you can what you think will happen to you as you physically die and once you are physically dead. End quote.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, you just finished playing basketball for, like, 10 minutes, and then you go sit down, and they put a piece of paper in front of you.
Oh, good game, man. So what do you think happens to you when you die? Write it down. Write it down. Write it down. Write it down.
Write it down. Here's a pencil. Go, 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 go.
He goes on. In the control condition, participants responded to parallel questions about playing basketball. Quote, please briefly describe the thoughts and emotions that the thought of playing basketball arouses in you. And jot down as specifically as you can what you think will happen to you as you play basketball.
I'm a huge fan of how pedestrian the basketball questions are.
Yeah. So what do you think about when you die? Okay. Interesting. What do you think about when you play a basketball?
It must have been, like, way cooler for the researcher. Like, when he was handing the people the questions that said, describe yourself dying. That was probably pretty stressful.
Yeah.
But then when he just handed someone a piece of paper that said, hey, what do you think about basketball? That was probably pretty chill.
Like, oh, yeah, I know that one.
Yeah.
That one's easy.
Like, I can answer these questions pretty good. I did some educational psychology stuff for a while, and I know how you write these questions. Mm-hmm. And I like that they just substituted out the thought of your own death with basketball. That makes me really happy.
Well, you know what they say about ball and how it is life.
It is life.
Perhaps ball is also death.
Mayhaps.
Mayhaps.
Dear York.
Perchance.
Have you ever done a study like this either? Have you ever been in like a psych study?
No. Because
I had to do them at Ohio State for like class credit for a quarter.
Right.
And they are really strange. You definitely feel weird because you know you're doing a study, but you don't know what they're testing you on.
Sure.
And I imagine for the people that thought they were doing a psychology study and then went in and played basketball and then took a break and then wrote about basketball and then played some more basketball, it was probably really confusing. They thought, oh, I thought I was going to be doing psychology today, but maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, the control group where they didn't talk about death.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a good day. You just got paid to play a little basketball.
Paid to hoop.
And talk about it.
Yeah.
There you go.
So the remarkable thing is that the group that was reminded of their own death and had to talk about death actually did better in the second half than the group that didn't, the control group.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the Confederate researcher had to play as hard as he could the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if he was like surprised when these people came out and they were like, I'm going to die. And then just dunked 12 times. Like maybe they couldn't dunk before and now they were doing like Vince Carter 2001 dunk contest dunks.
You said Vince Carter, and my basketball list knowledge, I just went straight to Aaron Carter. And
oh, well, he beat Shaq.
Right. He probably dunked on Shaq a few times, so the reference still applies.
Shaq picked him up and lifted him up to the basket so he could dunk.
Oh, it's a song about friendship.
It's a song about friendship. He's playing in town soon.
Shaq?
Aaron Carter.
Oh, not as interested.
Yeah.
Shaq could come to Columbus, though. That would be really cool.
That'd be pretty sweet. And, you know, much like Shaq, actually the opposite of Shaq, I don't know anything about basketball. I pretend like I do, but I really don't. The people who got the death prime got better at shooting, but not really anything else. They couldn't really rebound better. They couldn't block better. I guess they still traveled a lot. And the researchers kind of theorized that being reminded of your own death causes like a desire in you to go make a name for yourself. So that's why they got better at shooting instead of holding down the other player as much, you know.
Okay, interesting.
So in study two, they focused exclusively on shooting. Basically, they just got a bunch of people in a gym again and had them shoot some free throws. But this time, they had one ball, and they would shoot the ball, and the researcher would go get the ball and give the ball back to them. There's got to be a name for that. Pass the ball?
Who can say?
Who can say?
No one knows.
But if you scroll down, you'll find another quote from this article about what this researcher was doing. It's always good when you see the quote. And
I shouldn't have read ahead. All right. Quote. To prime death, we used a t-shirt with an image of a skull consisting of the word death printed on it multiple times. Primes with images of skulls and the word death have produced similar effects to the MS manipulation. Unlike MS induction, subtle death primes do not require a delay prior to the dependent variable for the effect to emerge. Participants were assigned to prime condition using a coin flip prior to entering the court. Experimenter 2 either unzipped his jacket to expose the t-shirt prime to participants, or zipped up his jacket in the control condition to conceal it. So basically, they got some Hot Topic shirt as part of this experiment.
I searched for like a solid 10 minutes to try and find an image of the t-shirt they used, and I couldn't find it. But just the fact that they said it was a t-shirt with an image of a skull consisting of the word death printed multiple times is really, really something.
This sounds like not too far from my current wardrobe. Definitely Teenage Dorian is all about this.
Uh-huh. Like a cool Misfits shirt, but says death instead of Misfits.
Yeah, but a lot. Death, 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 death.
Can you actually describe what's the shirt you're wearing right now?
Oh, yeah. It's from a clothing company called Violent Gents, and it's a collaboration with the band Knocked Loose. And it's a photo of Muhammad Ali punching some guy out. There's like a little caption that says, laughing at my pain. And I don't know, I just thought it looked dope as shit, so I got it.
It's really fucking cool.
Yeah.
I like that kind of the arc of your life has gone from shirts with skulls on them to shirts with people getting punched really hard in the face.
There's
which
a lot
is
of
a
that.
Skull. Like, that's a skull getting punched.
Yeah, can't get too far away from skulls.
And I really enjoy, too, how much of a power play do you think it would have been to be the researcher and, like, some University of Arizona freshman walks on the court and you're like, all right, we're going to be participating in this study today. And then you just unzip your jacket.
Excuse me, just don't mind me and just taking off my zip hoodie. Stretch out. Expose my shirt.
Yeah.
Anyway, who's ready for ball?
You just like slowly inbounding passes to this dude who's staring at your shirt. So, I mean, this study actually did even better than the first one because the participant only had to focus on shooting.
Right.
They shot way better, like statistically significantly better than they were before being exposed to the prime. So the control group did a worse job than the group who was exposed to the death shirt.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know what that means. I don't know if you can go to the Olympics and just yell at everyone how they're going to die. And then maybe they would win like a hyper gold medal.
You're going to die.
Like a titanium medal. That's what you yell at them as they're going down the bobsled course really fast.
You're going to die. What?
But, you know, I kind of wanted to ask you, as someone who participates in...
Death.
Well, we all participate in death.
Absolutely.
Do you call them contact sports or blood sports?
Contact sport sounds less pretentious than blood sport. But blood sport is a fantastic Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. So I'll let you call it whatever you want.
What's the Bruce Lee movie with Kareem?
That's Game of Death.
Game of Death. Okay, I was getting game and sport, and they were all getting jumped.
They're all basically the same.
I mean, you participate in aggressive sports.
Yeah, I mean...
What do you do? I don't... Is it Krav Maga, Muay Thai?
It's Muay Thai.
Muay Thai.
Yeah,
okay.
It's... And to be fair, I haven't competed. It's all just been, like, training. Some sparring,
yeah.
But nothing, like, too aggressive.
Yeah. But you train with people who have competed and things like that and fought.
Yeah, a little bit.
Do you think there's anything there that danger of being injured increases your competitive drive or anything like that?
I think even in sparring, there's no adrenaline dump quite like, this guy wants to punch me in the face.
Uh-huh.
I want to hit him and not get hit. That's part of the reason why I love that sport more than any other. With other sports, you do kind of get tangential experience with something violent or scary.
Yeah, like
with fighting, it's you and the other guy basically both trying to hurt each other. Now, not maliciously, you're fighting within a rule set, so it's not
yeah.
total blood sport. But, yeah, I mean, it's pretty thrilling, and, you know, to keep your composure in that setting is really challenging and interesting.
Yeah, I've boxed once.
Mm-hmm.
I boxed a friend of the podcast, Colin Casto.
Right.
We were in South Dakota, and we had helmets and big gloves and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He punched me once, and I basically just blacked out. It was remarkably quick. I was like, I can't see anything anymore.
Yeah, great job, Colin.
We punched each other for like 2 minutes after that, but I was very aware in that moment that I was going to die.
Yeah.
I'm not a muscular dude. Colin has, what, like maybe 2 inches on me?
Maybe. You guys are probably like pretty even height-wise, but he's got some muscle on him.
It was tough, but I don't know. I felt there pretty aware of the fact that I could die, and then I felt very invested in punching him more
right.
so I would get punched less.
Right. I find it interesting that the things that seem like they would be more closely related to death in some tangential way,
like stealing a ball.
Stealing, blocking, physical contact with other people, that was not improved with any kind of reminder of death.
Uh-huh.
But shooting a ball, throwing a ball a specific distance up into the air in a hook pattern so that it can fall through a net that's tied to a board, that is improved when you're reminded
yeah,
of death.
You'd be way
like
better.
Why
30% better.
Yeah, like why does the body do that? Why do we have that base reaction to the reminder of death that like, oh, I better do an arbitrary task that
I better shoot this ball way better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you just focus in more and are able to shoot the J.
Shoot that J like your life depends on it.
Yeah. I don't know if it would do any good to show up to sporting events or anything like that and just yell at players. Like, I'm not going to show up to a Sixers game and yell at Ben Simmons, get a triple-double tonight or else you're going to die.
You're going to die tonight, Ben Simmons.
All right, Ben Simmons, which he got a triple-double tonight, so I'm very proud of.
Nice.
My tall basketball son. I don't know if that would accomplish anything, but it would be very interesting.
It would be interesting to see if you would not get kicked out.
Yeah.
I would be very surprised.
I played football briefly in high school, and we would listen to, like, Limp Bizkit's Break Stuff to get primed for games.
Hell yeah. But not to knock Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit, because Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit is obviously one of the greatest songs of all time. But
obviously,
that doesn't really have anything to do with death or mortality, right? There's a difference, it seems, between songs that just get you pumped up and get a gut reaction of energy, and then just being reminded of your own mortality. So listening to Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit right before a performance, it gets you up there.
Pretty hyped.
But not quite as much as like an Elliott Smith song or, you know, something by Tom Waits or Nick Cave, just something real dark.
You know, admittedly, I never was good at football. Like, they let me start once, and I think I got hurt pretty quick. I tried to quit football, actually.
Oh.
And then my dad didn't let me quit. He made me keep playing, and it was terrible.
But you learned perseverance, right?
Yeah, I mean, I learned that I lied to my dad, and then it didn't work out, so...
Ooh.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe I should have just been listening to... just like Tibetan death chants or something like that.
Yep.
And I would have been better at football.
That's key.
So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what terror management theory is and how it applies to sports. So maybe if you're listening to this podcast and thinking about how you're going to die now, maybe go shoot some baskets or go to a batting cage or play hockey.
Clack, clack. Hockey.
Hockey is really horrifying. I don't know if I would rather be punched in the head or have someone shoot a rubber disc at me very, very hard.
I feel like I would always rather be punched in the head than take a hockey puck. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious, does this affect other aspects of life too? Are other performances, whether they're creative performances or academic performances, I wonder if there are studies on those things. Maybe that's why I was a bad student all through high school, was that
you didn't think about death enough.
People didn't remind me that I'm going to die, and I'm going to go ahead and pin it on that.
Well, maybe you were actually helping everyone else out by wearing Misfits shirts with a skull on them, and all your classmates were taking tests and looking at you wearing a shirt with a skull on it and being like, "Oh man, I'm going to die. I should probably do good on this test."
Yeah, I blame all of you for not being goth enough. Well, thank you, Max, for educating us on terror management theory.
Yeah, no, and sports.
And sports.
And sports.
I'm glad you got to talk about sports, because I know you love sports, and you've got some good insights on it, too.
Good sports.
If you've had any brushes with death or reminders of death that have affected your performance in school, in...
sport.
In love.
In love.
You can let us know. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at PreDeadBoys. You can email us, PreDeadBoys@gmail.com. Search PreDeadBoys on Facebook. Find our Facebook group. It's going to be a place where we post episode updates, yes, but also, you know, we want to hear from you guys. We want to talk about this stuff.
Episode ideas.
Yeah, we're open to any suggestions or feedback that you guys have.
Cool Memento Mori paintings you found.
Yeah, I'm looking at this Van Gogh painting and thinking about a new wallpaper on my phone, which is not an impressive thing to announce to people on a podcast, but I'm going to do that. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by the band Brat Curse. Thank you, Brat Curse, for letting us use your song. You can check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. They're wrapping up a new album, so they'll be posting that at some point soon. Great.
Uh-oh.
Great stuff. Max, you got anything else to say to our listeners before we sign off?
Not particularly. Oh, boy. Hold on. Let me look at a picture of a skull really quick, and then I'll...
improve your performance. Go look at a dead thing and think about how you're going to be like that dead thing one day. And then go live life to the fullest.
If anything, that's what our podcast is about, trying to get you to do.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Thanks.
Bye. Don't die. will sinner in secret.
Hey.
When the lights go out.
Run away with me.
Run away with me. Yeah, that song's a banger.